You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Come in, West Coast Edition Garden Report. John Zanis, Bobby Manning, Sherrod Blakely out in Portland. Jimmy Toscano has a way of just popping into these things. So that's not
it is happening tonight. He was active in the group chat. He was feeling the game.
Jimmy might be coming. Jimmy's going to surprise
Jimmy
us.
Jimmy is coming. I have no doubt about it.
What you have here? 145, 117. I want some numbers. When was the last time Celtics scored this much back-to-back games?
Ooh, I don't think I can do that. But I
don't
can,
know it. I'm waiting for somebody smarter than us with research capabilities. It's probably not hard to find. Right?
What was it last game? 130, right?
130 on the dot, right? 137, 130.
Yeah, so I'll pull that up in a minute.
But it's still an unbelievable shooting night. And again, we play the make-miss league game. It's really nice when you're the one making all the shots versus, last night watching Utah do what they did. But 56 field goal, 57 three-point, percentage, 26 assists. And again,
Utah started in this one, 14 to 15.
It's just – stuff was falling. It was just one of those games. Tatum was in his bag. Schroeder. Who knew Dennis Schroeder was good, Bobby?
Schroeder isn't just good. He's awesome. And he saved this team this season. You know what?
Yeah, he pretty much has. Dennis, this is the, I spent some time on Twitter arguing with people about this today. The Dennis Schroeder stuff just seemed to get out of hand. It's like people are expecting him to be a player like that he's never been in his career, not even taking into account that they got him for nothing. And right now, where would this team be without Dennis Schroeder? They would have some serious problems. He's really saved them a lot, in a lot of games.
You think of where Pritchard went. If you had to rely on Pritchard,
imagine,
let's say a G League guy or some cast off, you'd be in real trouble at point guard. And, before Schroeder got mixed in with the starting lineups, the closing lineups, Marcus Smart was really struggling. And I thought that was one of the great things he did was take the pressure offensively off Smart, let him be who he was in 2020 range there when Kemba was rolling and you had Hayward and that kind of stuff. The more I watch this team, I don't think they're the exact same roster, but the feel around this team to me is starting to resemble 2020 a little bit. They don't have the talent that team did. But it's starting to fit together in a very cohesive way. They're playing off each other well. The offense is coming alive. I didn't expect any offense even resembling this year. So even if it's just a spot thing, the fact that they're capable of this is impressive. And obviously it stems from Tatum. It stems from Schroeder playing at his best. But to get guys like Cantor, Freedom rather, you have Grant mixing in here, Smart having solid offensive games.
Yeah, I don't want to go there this early in this conversation because I don't want to make this about that yet. But the one thing they've had a difficult time doing is fitting Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum together right now. When you talk about cohesion, the one bump in the road they've had when they tried to integrate Jaylen back in and when he was playing before, we haven't seen that yet from this team. Figuring out the best way to maximize those guys together on the floor. Haven't gotten that, but you have seen great other combos for out of other people. You like Smart and Schroeder a lot, obviously Smart and Rob, that's their best two-man duo on the team, just in terms of net rating.
I think they're eighth in the league as a two-man pair.
Those guys, they're a top 10 team they're a top 10 pair in the league. I can't remember exactly where, but yes.
Yeah, they were up there.
Yeah, they're up there. There are some good combos there. I don't want to make this about Jaylen yet. That's, oddly enough, that's an area they're struggling right now. And then what the rotations will be when he comes back.
Yeah, and they haven't had a lot of opportunities to look at what the team is going to be in those situations. I think it's still just six games all year that they've had the full cast.
I know.
Not very cohesive when it comes together, and that's in that dynamic there. And fortunately, we did hear from Ime today that they're going to wait it out with Jalen this time. So though I wouldn't be stunned if Jalen misses this whole West Coast trip here to just get that right. He's on the trip. He's pushing him play like crazy. Better to just leave him out of the equation for as long as possible because you're playing well without him. There's no urgency. I know there is on his part for some reason or another, but you have something good going here. I don't think there's any rush to integrate Tate Brown. You still have upwards of 60 games left in the season. There's a good rotation rolling right now that you like with Schroeder closing, Grant mixing in with the starters, Horford playing great when he's out there. So, like, I like what they look like without Brown right now. And that's not to say they're better without Brown to do that kind of thing, but these guys have had the opportunity to mesh. And you're right. You think of, what are we talking about now with Brown? Two games on top of eight. So 10 games without Brown with the hamstring plus another with the knee. So that's 11 games that they've been without Brown this season. As many games as they've had him, they've not had him. And they've had a lot of opportunity here to create good, solid rotations without him. And I want to keep rolling. The record's really good. I don't have it off the top of my head. They played well in that stretch without him the last time. Now a win and another great offensive performance the game before this in Utah. Something's clicking. I don't know if it's a case of just Brown and Tatum not being able to mesh out there at the same time.
And like I said, I hate going there because it feels like it's an unnecessary hot take. It's just an observation. That's when you're talking about meshing, that's the one thing we haven't seen yet. You know, as you started mentioning it, but what you have seen is they've unlocked a few things. You know, Marcus Smart, like, you look at the evolution of the team in a lot of different ways. And again, I was as happy off a loss as I've ever been yesterday, just watching the way they played. And I know people will be like, the defense was atrocious, but like, if Celtics play like they played against Utah all season long, they're a four seed, you know, and that, and you'll be there. You'll be satisfied with that effort, you know, night in, night out. But you've unlocked a couple of things. Marcus Smart's clearly getting better at this as the season goes on. He had a really rough first few weeks as he was figuring out who he was supposed to be on this team and in this offense. And again, since the Smart comments, and they mentioned it a bunch on the broadcast, I mean, since that, Smart has played a lot better. The offense has run through him a lot more. Tatum has gotten better. Brown hasn't really been around for it. Things have improved, but he's gotten better. Richardson has gotten better. Cantor, who was on mothballs, all of a sudden is useful. You know, Rob is starting to look. I know he's missed some time. These few games, even though he didn't have a good box score tonight, he's looking more springy and active, much more like last year's Rob, just in terms of the way he's moving. A lot of things are happening that are good. You just got to get Brown in there. You got to get Brown healthy, and you got to figure out what this team's going to be with him in there.
Yeah, and I think a good proxy for Brown would be Josh Richardson. I wrote about him today. I think he's filled that role well in terms of how you can fit next to Tatum if you're Brown. As things like he did early last season, sprinkle in some mid-range there, get downhill, get some closer shots to the basket, and move off the ball. That's the things that Brown is going to have to do. We talked a lot about what Tatum
and every once in a while pass the ball every once in a while.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about what Tatum needs to do to make those two connect. Just watching Richardson and the way he plays off Tatum, those two have a great dynamic between them, I feel like. It's just a lot of activity by Richardson. He goes and finds the ball. And I think I mentioned this on a past show. He said in the training camp, I was like, what's the key to playing off Tatum? What's the key to connecting with him? And he's like, you got to make yourself available. And when you talk about Brown and Tatum, I think that's something we see on film again and again that Brown doesn't necessarily do, even though he's got the skill set to do it. It's almost like it's a wait for your turn dynamic between the two in terms of running the offense. And that probably bleeds into other guys on the offense too, right? Like, is everyone else looking around like, all right, we're waiting for the Brown possession, we're waiting for the Tatum possession? There's just not real flow or rhythm or pace to the game off one ball handler, off one offensive engine. So I think this year is starting to show us a lot about that dynamic between those two. It's tough, right? Because they're both stars, they're both high level scorers, they both do it with the ball in their hands. it's going to take sacrifice from one of them. And it probably has to be Brown just in terms of where he is this season because he's been less available. Tatum's the guy out there who's working through struggles and, you know, finding himself finally. You know, good balance on his shot, getting downhill, drawing free throws, passing, 4.5 assists the last two games.
Well, and 2 turnovers totally at a 0 turnover game last night, 2 tonight, and that's something that's great that you're seeing from him as well. These are his two, I hate, you know, hyperbole without going back and looking at it, but this is as solid a back-to-back as he's played this year, just in terms of clean games, letting the offense flow through him. You know, all of the shots are good shots, confident shots. They're falling more. There was a game, actually even 2 games ago. I'm going to say this is a 3. I mean, even last game, I liked all of the threes he took. They just, I liked every shot he took. It just didn't fall, which was a bummer.
And the 3 still not quite there.
He was 4-6 tonight. So so he had it. He just went 2-for-11 yesterday. Mm-hmm. But I like that a lot. It's just getting downhill. What did he have? He had double-digit free throws tonight, I think. All right, the Garden Report post-game show, as always, is brought to you by our exclusive wagering partner, BetOnline. Just go to betonline.ag, use the code CLNS50 for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We've got it all going right now. You got basketball, hockey, NFL football, NCAA football, horses, MMA, golf. Is there still golf? If there isn't, there's always golf.
There's always some kind of golf.
Props, live betting, all kinds of weird stuff outside of the sports realm. Anything you want to, you know, place a bet on.
Yep.
BetOnline's got it. BetOnline.ag. Code CLNS50. 50% welcome bonus. Go check it out right now. And as always, make sure to gamble responsibly.
Yep. 10.5 the last 2 games. Just as he ticks up, the offense is ticked up, and you see.
But the way he's getting to the basket, great stuff tonight. And I know they broke down on a couple, but just the use of his body to either absorb contact or just getting clean to the rim without foul hunting, which is a lot of what we felt like he was doing before. He's going with more of a purpose, which is like, how am I going to get this shot off clean, absorb contact if I need to, or just avoid it altogether, as opposed to before, it really felt like he spent first half of the season just hunting fouls every time he went to the basket and would just throw his hands up with no real purpose. So he's just much, much, much better, you know, offensively. He's got that little swagger back, you know, he's got that thing where it's like, here I come, you know, so Tatum's
the body language. Scal was talking about it. Yeah. It was completely different from the early going here. And they set a tone early that if we're going to have any gripes out of this game, it's probably Ime, right? Disrupting in the second quarter. I mean,
you know what, though? How many times have we seen it go the other way, right? You get away with a substitution rotation early. You go back to it late. It kills you. And now you've blown the lead and you're entering the fourth quarter. In this case, the bench let a 21-point lead get down to 4 or something, or 2 or whatever it was. And then they went back to the bench in the third quarter and they extended that lead. So they did hang in there. And Rob got himself in foul trouble again, kind of lack of discipline there on his part, knowing he's really the only big. But
yeah, and that actually helped them against
Nurkic. They did well in those canter minutes. They did well with that unit in there. So in the third quarter, the subs did their job. In the second quarter, they didn't.
Yeah, and for Tatum, I'm looking at the shot chart again here. Mid-range, just a mess in this one. And I did write about the mid-range shot for BSJ last night in the notebook. And, like, his numbers, mid-range this year, they're in line with his career average. So everything else has fallen down, and the mid-range isn't helping him. Like, leaning on that, he hasn't done it well his whole career, 39%. 39% again to start this year. And he's taking more of them. Most since that 2019 season. He's not quite there as a share of his overall shots. I think he was 26% from mid-range that year,
right?
Taking 22% of his shots from mid-range this year, but well above probably his low in 2020. I think it was when Brad was really pressing that down to go toward exclusively threes and layups. We talked about the step back last game, right? Does he need the step back? We kind of settled on yes. Does he need the mid-range? I know you're a mid-range proponent.
Again, I'm not a mid-range proponent. I am a good shot proponent. I don't care where it comes from.
That's a good point.
That's all I say. If you get to a spot and you're clear and you're open and you got free and that's where you are, shoot it. That's a good shot. You know, like it's not mid range per se. It's just, like I said, is the bad thing is contested twos. It's just that the long contested twos are the worst thing, but work to get to your spot, wherever your bread and butter is, and hit those shots. I'm fine with them. Tatum's problem is they're really long twos, and that's where he gets burned.
I don't know if you're looking at the shot chart right now, but he is miles from the paint on some of these twos, and that's where
that's the problem.
You kind of say, why not just take a three here? If he took a million threes in a game and completely cut out those twos, I think it'd be fine. You probably
My high school coach would yank you if you took a shot with your foot on the 3-point line or just inside it.
Yeah.
He's like, even then. Back then, he'd be like, that's the dumbest shot in basketball. Before the 3-point explosion in sports, you know, high school coach would say, do not shoot that shot. It's the worst shot in basketball.
I know. And to think Kevin Garnett had the career he had, been taking that shot over and over again. And a lot of guys did. People loved that shot in the 2000s. It's dead. Tatum's trying to bring it back. I mean, you look at the Utah game, he is like stepping back into those long twos. No real awareness of where the shots are coming from on the floor on his part, it seems. Just trying to find space for himself. But other times, you know, shooting right against intense pressure. You saw that against Utah, like right up against two guys contesting them straight up. Why not pass out of those spots? I think that's something he can do to reduce mid-range total. It's going to probably reduce his overall shots during the flow of a game. But I think we were happy about that when he did it against Toronto. Pass up on shots when he didn't have it going and try to get some other guys going there. Again, this is a real good week for Tatum in terms of finding the sweet spot between creating and scoring. And obviously this team needs a lot of scoring creation from him to get to these totals. You see the engine that they can be when he's himself, even with the limitations that they have offensively as a team. But that's the key. Like, you're not drawing free throws from those mid-range spots or the deep twos, whatever you want to call them. You're not setting up guys to get second chance opportunities from those spots, really, I'd say. You're not getting guys going downhill unless you're doing some pick and roll in those spots. And you're probably not. Most of this is isolation, right? Just dribbling away against a guy. So, like, this is a good game, but I'm just staring at the shot chart here, and I see the big six red X's across the free throw line there out to the wing, and those just aren't great shots for him right now. They've never been. We're this many years into his career now, the percentage really hasn't changed. When I wrote that BSJ article, there was an interesting thing Matt Moore shared, that like the more mid-rangers that you take, this is across NBA history, it like taking more doesn't make you better. You're either good at it and you got it, like you're Chris Paul, you're Kevin Durant, or you're Tatum and you're 39% from there. No matter how many take you, you're always going to be 39% from there. And when you look at his history, that's pretty much it for him. So he'll make himself more efficient, more consistent. I don't think those shots really add much to his game. It's nice to have it in your arsenal. He certainly does. Like, he can get those shots off in crunch time at the shot clock. But that's the point, thing, John. Like, there's 18 on the clock when he takes a lot of these.
Yeah. That's the problem. Is, again, we've talked about this. A player like Tatum doing what he does and being able to be long and have that step back and get off those contested shots is great. When offense breaks down and you hand him the ball with 7 seconds on the clock and you're like, get a shot off. A lot of people can't get a shot off. He can. That's a skill. Just simply being able to get a decent shot. Most people cannot. So that's where you use those. That's the only time you use those. Late in the clock when there's no opportunity to run your offense and work the ball around. It's okay, we've got to get a shot up here. I'm gonna do it. You get the ball early in the clock and you take 10 seconds with it, and then you fire up one of those. That's obviously not what you're looking for. But
why do you think he does it? Is it the contact thing in the lane? I don't know.
It's what you grew up with. He grew up watching Kobe. It's much simpler than we make it out to be. Is you model your game after a guy who's setting people up and then pulling up in their face. That's just what you do, and that's what he's done. Just want to remind everybody again, Sherrod Blakely in Portland is going to join us in a little bit. Sherrod, of course, with Bleacher Report and various other outlets. Bobby Manning writing for CLNS Media and Boston Sports Journal. He has articles up on both sites right now, so make sure you check those out. And we'll obviously have something on tonight's game as well as they head to LA. Plus CLNS Media, we've got full court press in the next few games. We've got a couple of reporters covering the Lakers and the Clippers, plus Sherrod will be out there as well. So we've got a ton more stuff out west from this West Coast trip. We don't sleep. We'll be coming to you, bringing you post-game shows. I can't wait to
see Nick in the field. This is the comeback.
Post-game shows, and right, exactly. Joe Sway will be out there. Nick will be out there. And Sherrod will be out there as well. So we are fully covered for the next few games. Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yep. We got Tuesday, 2 days Wednesday. Off here. So they'll probably have a practice in L.A. And then you get the
2 days off. 2 days off. Mm-hmm. I got a Patriots game, Bobby. We got Evan Lazar in Buffalo, but we've got, you enjoy the rest.
LeBron available. That's a big boost to this week. Yeah. Phoenix losing their win streak. That would have been cool if you were going.
We may
up
head out to Phoenix too, so stay tuned on that. We may take the road trip all the way to Phoenix.
It would have been cool to have history lined up there potentially in a game like that. I don't know what exactly number it would have been, but Golden State took it pretty convincingly. And Chauncey Billups, I mean, things are – you probably don't want to go the Portland direction yet here, but, like, it is – I know Scal was talking about it on the broadcast, and you do watch this team right now, and just the GM situation that we hinted at last show, things are falling apart there bad. And I think that's probably where you start to reel in the takeaway a little bit from this game on a Celtics perspective. I mean, you faced a dead team here that is just reaching its end as an era, it seems like, and never played good defense to begin with. This was always a good get right game against a team like this, especially when Cantor was on that side. You'd love to go at him there, but like, they are just out of gas. It seems we'll see if Lillard gets back. If he ever even makes another appearance in that uniform, like I think we're closer than people realize on that.
It might be
coming to a head.
But you need a boss. You know, you need somebody calling shots.
That's
here.
What they're so waiting for.
We'll see what happens here. And I don't think a GM comes in. I think it's. I know you're saying it's closer than it seems. Typically,
dictated by Lillard, right?
A general manager doesn't walk through the door and immediately set fire to things. You have to take stock of what you have a little bit. So I don't know how fast it's going to happen. We'll see. We'll see what Danny's going to do.
no Danny announcement today. I guess
we'll see
be tomorrow. I was hoping.
A couple things we did want to talk about because people were, excited to see it. I hate, I don't want to pour cold water all over it. But, Nesmith is still a freaking basket case out there, and he's still totally lost. And he just runs into people all the time, and he's out of position a ton. But that's fine if he can come in and knock down some shots. So it's nice to see some confidence, gain some confidence by just seeing the ball go down a little bit for him. That's all you want out of him. I think he's not going to be a guy who can give you major minutes. Hey, is this guy going to try to join us here?
Who is it?
It's not Jimmy.
I thought. What
is this guy? Sherrod.
Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, Sherrod. Jet lag city.
Yeah, we got you. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
What's up, Portland?
It's a little noisy here in Rip City, but you
I do not have Sherrod.
You don't have him?
There he is.
There he is. Anyway, what are your thoughts, Sherrod? Welcome to the broadcast.
What a beatdown. This was bad, man. This was really bad. I know they didn't have Dame Lillard, and obviously that impacts your chances of winning, but damn, this was really bad. I mean, Grant Williams getting it done, Tatum, Schroeder, Peyton Pritchard. I mean, you go down the line, everyone had a big game. Peyton hitting shots from damn near half court, hitting logo Lillard shots in this game. Even when the game was out of hand, it doesn't matter. I was dreaming of that. This was like the stimulus package that Ime needed for this team. They needed a night like this where everything seemed to fall in place. Even when the lead got down to like 1 or 2 points, you never really got a feeling as though they were going to lose this game because Portland, just never really, they made a few shots, but for the most part, this is a, Portland's a bad team right now. They really are. I talked to Chauncey Billups after the game, and, you know, this was the first time he said he's addressed the team after a loss. Usually he just kind of lets them do their thing, but he had to speak on this one, and the message was pride. They didn't play with any kind of pride. It's one thing to get your ass kicked, but at least get your ass kicked trying to play with some type of effort.
You played your Pistons card and got Chauncey.
We've seen a lot of games like that. We've seen a lot of games like that where they just didn't seem to play with a tremendous amount.
Oh, now I know why Sherrod went to Portland.
You played your Pistons card with Chauncey?
That's my guy. That's my guy. His team is not very good, unfortunately.
Tough job for him to enter into. I was just saying, Sherrod, like, it feels like that whole thing's coming to an end, like, sooner than anyone can imagine.
Yeah. They're going to have to do something. I mean, it really does feel like they're at that point where they got to blow everything up and just start. And if you're the Celtics, I mean, you know, I would look long and hard about some of those pieces on that Portland roster that I might want
to. That's the exciting thing, right? A lot of these guys would help you.
Because I still think Covington didn't play well, but he's a guy that I think you could help you do some good things. I stay away from Dennis Smith Jr., though. I will absolutely stay away from him. I don't think he can help you. But there's at least three or four guys in this roster, not named C.J. McCollum, who I think can do some things. And maybe made available once we get closer to the trade deadline.
Yeah, Covington, potentially a TPE guy. I want to look at the salary.
How are you gonna mention? Briefly. How are you gonna mention trades and not mention Nance? He's been a future Celtic for like 4 years.
He's another guy, and they don't play him much.
You know,
like I said, there are three or four guys, and I didn't want to mention his name because we always mention his name.
He's literally his name is.
These are the kind of
potential
guys
future Celtic, Larry Nance. Right.
I mean, I don't know which. I mean, have we talked more about him or Ben Simmons when it comes to the Celtics? I don't know. Yeah. It's pretty close.
Get ready for Ben's name to reemerge if Portland's selling and. Yeah, Nance, Covington, both TP guys, 10, 12 million bucks there. That would be a huge opportunity if Portland goes in that direction.
Let's mention it because Sherrod talked about it in passing. We were talking about Nesmith. Good to see some shots fall. I know the Pritchard stuff is all garbage time, but man, did he need this. Did he need something like this, right? Like,
he did.
Badly, right?
This was so big for him.
I mean, even getting that first one to go.
You know, and again, it was garbage minutes, but he literally needed to see the ball go through the rim badly. Him and Nesmith. And I felt better about Nesmith only because he didn't really see – Nesmith, it seems like his biggest issue is he just doesn't take enough shots.
That's the thing. It's not just he doesn't take it. Like, we had this issue with Brad last year. If you put him out there, you got to try to unlock him, which means – you know he's going to be passive. You either got to tell the guys, I want him to get a shot or two early or run a set or two for him. You can't just let him be out there and then let Jalen shoot 15 times and never look at him. And even in those games where Jalen's cooking, and there's been a lot of them, but you're not going to get anything out of these guys unless you get them into the flow. Nesmith has to get some shots up when he's out there, and he did. I think he played in that stretch where they, you know, the plus minus of his unit, they were out there was fine, but I think he had one shot. It was a miss. Wasn't even a three, one field goal in his first stint. And that was it. And then in the second time out, he did get a couple of shots up, which is great. And you see how much the bench is into it and how much support they have. You got to empower the guy a little bit when he's out there, you got to get him some looks. And that's incumbent on the coach and the stars. To look for him and see if you can get him going.
Yeah,
because otherwise he's useless out there. Like
right. But this was a perfect storm to do that, John. Because
because there's no pressure.
Well, no pressure in the fact that you're playing the second worst defense in the NBA. And when you look at the way Tatum was able to get to the cup for layups with no one near him, which to me is mind blowing. When you can be the best scorer on a team and you're able to get to the cup with no one coming close to touching you. So they needed this. I mean, this was a perfect team for them to kind of get all that feel-good mojo out of them and just really go into and have a couple of days to kind of, you know, focus on the LA teams and feel good about yourself. Feel that you can maybe turn to Pritchard maybe for a few minutes here and there, and he won't be as, like, ice cold as we've seen him up to this point, the last couple of weeks.
But that's the thing is, like, those guys, what, you know, what's the impact Pritchard made last year? Instant offense. He was able to score for you, and that was a bit of a revelation. He's been so ice cold, and the nose definitely set him back. He really shot poorly with that face mask on. And just the minutes have been so down because Schroeder just ate them all up, and we said that that was very possible at the beginning of the year. I know you and I, Sherrod, thought, like, I don't know where these Pritchard minutes are coming from. So he's out there with such a little chance to make an impact. It is important to see some shots go down because they had not been at all.
Yeah, and I think the point you made, John, about supporting those guys, giving them structure to actually succeed in those minutes is important. I just couldn't stand going as deep into the bench, running like an end-of-game garbage time unit in the second quarter like they did. You know, put these guys out there with Tatum. Put them out there with some
again,
regular starters.
That's
give
always
them a chance
been
to succeed.
That was my big thing last year, which was on the games where you were missing a star, I'm like, start Nesmith tonight. Get him run with the big boys in minutes that matter instead of the ones you're playing them in. You're playing them with bench units or end-of-game situations that don't really matter. You know, I've even floated the idea of doing it for real now, you know, when you're fully healthy.
I don't know if you can do it now just because I think you're a good team that – just trying to win. And it's such a packed league this year, and I don't think you can break up rotations that are working with guys who aren't playing well. I mean, again, you see in this game, you know, Pritchard piled it on in the end, and Nesmith did a few things, but they're not playing good. They get opportunities again and again, and they're not playing good. They're not playing better than the veterans. They're not even close. So this idea that you can just force these guys to play good just by shoving minutes their way isn't going to work. So they got to find other ways. This was a great game to do it. I got very concerned in that second quarter because that was the window to do it. You know, pair them with a staggered bench lineup and give them a real opportunity to succeed there. And instead, they did the Herman Gomez thing.
Herman!
And that lineup just completely fell apart within minutes. The lead's down to 2-3, as Sherrod said. And
look at how concerned Sherrod is about the Herman Gomez minutes.
You can't keep them out there any longer because the league's in trouble.
There you go. Yeah.
When Herman got into the game.
I love that he's Herman.
The first minute was just terrifying. I mean, first he turns the ball over and then he slips getting back on defense.
And then he's launching shots like it's garbage time.
It wasn't garbage time when he got on the floor the first stint.
I know.
It was actually a decent game. He made me so damn nervous when he's out there.
That lineup made sure that this was going to be a decent game for at least a stretch.
Him specifically makes me nervous because he likes to shoot. He likes to shoot.
Yeah, we saw him the first minutes he had in a long time, right? He had those 5 shots in 4 minutes, and we're like, Herman, you know, like, pump the brakes, buddy.
You got 4 other guys on your team. This isn't like who scores the most points gets the next 10-day contract. It's not that kind of party.
It was like Ime just wanted to love some content our way, and I wished he was good. Like, you know, I love the Spanish players,
so
the Spanish national team. $6 million, trade filler there. If
we love our Vitor Favorinis. We love those guys, you know?
But I don't know. He hasn't even shown a minute of promise here. So
Is Parker alive?
Technically. I know when the game was over and I was in one of the media rooms, he was one of the first people that went past me, so I know he's here.
He's alive and breathing. By the way, no
shower for Jabari after the game.
Hey, that's out of my zip code, but if he decided not to, I think he'd be okay.
Yeah.
Right? He'd be okay.
Warmed up.
You have a shower-free Saturday. He's good.
Speaking of Parker, I don't know if you guys have seen, but Garrison Matthews is killing it in Houston, the guy that the Celtics let go with Parker. So that's something to keep an eye on around the league, at least, is he's starting for them. He's hitting close to 50% of his threes since then. I noticed him when they played here earlier in the week, or last week, I guess it was now. So maybe a guy you could have used, but again, back end of the rotation stuff. And again, it's almost like Ime's showing you with these minutes, Herman Gomez, you know, Nesmith, Pritchard, he's like, you guys want to see them? Here they are.
Okay,
and there goes the lead.
Go.
And everyone is just like, no, no, no.
Look, I mean, it's what are you going to do? I mean, there's no alternative. You got to play these guys. You're down three rotation or starter, you know, caliber guys tonight.
Like I said, it was just you're rotation.
You're on a back to back. What are you going to do? Like, you know, you're starting your only real viable big. Otherwise you're into Freedom minutes, which is fine. Cause he played well. And then you're starting your 2 point guards, which means you're into Pritchard land. So like when those guys come out, who's coming in, you know, and Rob had the foul trouble too. I mean, Ime didn't have a lot of options there. I mean, you can't play these guys 40 minutes on a back to back.
Yeah, but you can't play them together like he did at the same time. That's what killed them there.
I don't know.
Did a better job later in the game.
It's tough. It's tough. When you have Jalen and Jason, you leave one of them on there with your bench unit, and, you know, you survive those. I mean, there really was nobody left. You know, they just didn't have it, you know?
Well, you know what? There's a balance here. Like we said with Brown, they got to find him more, but he's also going to make himself available. They got to set up Neesmith more. I agree with you there, John. But he's also got to find a way to fit in within the flow of things. And in this game, 3 assists, keeping the ball popping like he did.
He had a great one early, right?
Yeah, and attacking the lane and then freeing himself on the pass.
Who
back
was that
to him.
Bullet pass, top of the key, underneath the basket? Was that to Rob or to, I forget what
he
that
had a
was.
Transition throw to Rob. That was the third assist. And then, yeah, I think
the
other
first
one
was
too.
Outstanding, and I can't remember what it was, but it was a really high-level pass for him in a half-court
This was his. This was some of his best passing I've seen. And, you know, I'm curious. I am how these guys develop when they're not getting these minutes. They're not in Maine, as we've talked about. I mean, Sherrod, when you have young guys on the roster and you're not practicing, you're not in Maine, you're not playing, I mean, what can you do to improve? John does have a point there. And developing these guys, I know it's not their top priority, but it's...
It was cancer. Yep. Neesmith to cancer. Yep.
It's part of what they're doing here.
Yeah. I mean, the guys aren't going to develop unless they play. It's that simple. There's no amount of, like, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, off-day workouts and watching video and all that stuff. It can help. But you're not going to see tangible growth from guys until they get out there and play and make mistakes. But to me, the issue isn't whether they make mistakes. Is what do they learn from those mistakes? Are they repeating the same mistakes over and over and over again? That's a problem. But if they're making mistakes and they're getting better, like I look at Grant Williams as a great example of that. You think about what Grant Williams was a year ago, and it's dramatically different than where
he wasn't
is
that guy be. Driving on the baseline through contact.
I mean, think about how ridiculous would we have looked if we looked at Grant Williams doing a pump fake 3-point shot, take 2-3 dribbles in, and shoot a little floater on a baseline.
He is so confident right now.
Yeah.
And I even saw that red outfit he was wearing in Utah to the game with the Nikes. I mean, he's showing out through his wardrobe too, just how confident he is right now.
All right, guys, quick pause. We want to tell you about one of our sponsors, and that is INSA. We're welcoming back INSA.
INSA.
Exactly. It's one of Massachusetts' premier cannabis dispensaries, INSA, I-N-S-A. Their founders, Pat and Pete, they re-engineered the cannabis model from what they sell to how they sell it. INSA dispensaries are inviting. They're modern. The staff are authorities on the science. They go in there, they can answer any question, difference between flowers, concentrates, what you want to take for insomnia, anxiety,
edibles,
hanging out with friends, whatever you want. They'll tell you exactly what you need to fill your needs. World-class head chef there as well. And again, the founders, one thing we want to tell you about
head
them,
chef.
They're local. They're local. They're from Western Mass.
Salem.
Yep. No.
Oh, yeah.
Located in Salem, but
there's a location in Salem.
They're from Springfield. Bobby jumped the gun because the Salem location is near his house. But they're lifelong pals from Springfield. There's a couple of locations out there. One near the MGM Casino. You can also go to East Hampton, or as Bobby said, Salem. This is the thing. Not enough people took advantage of this, so we're going to tell you about the deal one more time. If you go there and you mention that the Garden Report told you to stop by, you get a t-shirt for a penny. That's literally all you have to do. And then you get anything else you want there too. That's not on us, but the t-shirt is on us. One penny.
You know what? And I have a couple t-shirts and they're very comfy too.
So yes. Go to
t-shirts.
Get that green one.
Otherwise, go to INSA.com or call 877-500-INSA for any inquiries you have about anything else going on. But if you want the t-shirt for a penny, just mention the Garden Report. Go get yourself some. Once again,
have a good time.
Yeah, have a good time. Visit the various locations throughout Massachusetts or go to INSA.com or call 877-500-INSA.
Yeah. I mean, they're getting lots of different guys. I don't know if you guys talked earlier about what Marcus Smart was doing. He was in full.
Marcus.
Well, here's the thing. They clearly read the scouting report, and the scouting report indicated that you go at CJ and you go at him often because he can't. He's just not big enough. This is one of the issues that Portland has had for years is that their guards are too small, and bigger guards like Marcus Smart, they're either going to post you up and just use their strength to get buckets, or you're going to do what Dennis did, which is just blow by you and force you to either give them layups or they get fouled. I mean, CJ picked up like three of his four fouls and within like 90 seconds because they made a concerted effort to go at him. And that's, again, kudos to Marcus Smart and Dennis Schroeder for recognizing that particular matchup and the Celtics for being smart enough to attack it. I thought that was really one of the big keys of this game. They found matchups and situations that were in their favor, and rather than fiddle around and overthink the process and try to swing the damn ball two or three times too many, just beast little fella. Mouse in the house. Crush him.
He's been the biggest benefactor of Ime on both ends, I think. His willingness to post up, his willingness to let guys shoot mid-rangers, the switching on defense works so well for Smart. And he just makes it all connect out there. And then I think bringing in Schroeder, too, huge difference over last year. He looks healthier, certainly. The burst that he has right now is good. The strength in the post that you talked about there, Sherrod, he was moving CJ. And I don't know. I don't know if Ime's gotten through to him or he just realized his role in this offense or what. But
got through to everybody else, actually, is what happened.
Boom. Well, I'm just talking about the threes. The threes, John. The threes, like the crazy threes.
Sherrod and I were among the few who were like on Marcus's side when he said what he said. And I know he was playing like crap then, but
I'm just talking about the threes, though.
The turnaround has been tangible. Yeah.
Those crazy threes that made us lose our mind in the past, I don't even see them anymore.
Happening now is that, like, at the start of this game, where they made 14 of the first 15 shots, you go back and look at the ball movement between Jalen and Marcus. I mean, they were playing that two-man game, and that forced this Portland defense to react
Ball's
in ways that –
moving faster.
Yeah. Everything was just popping. And that's,
Schroeder was moving the ball, too. All of them were.
He was. And he was getting anywhere he wanted to when he wanted to get there. It was bad.
There's a buy-in. There's a connectivity across this team right now. You have passers everywhere. You weren't with us, Sherrod, last game, but the lineup you put out there in crunch time is the Celtics. Five ball handlers, five passers, spacing the floor the way they did. It didn't work. This Utah just unloaded an avalanche on them in the last 5 minutes there. But you look at that lineup that they put out there to close the game with Richardson instead of Rob. 136 offensive rating in those 5 minutes. The stuff that they're able to do just because of the amount of playmakers that they have a ton of versatility on defense because everyone defends here. But I feel like everybody on this team has the ability to pass. And we opened the show talking about, you know, maybe why this looks a little bit better without Brown now. Not saying that they're better without Brown or anything like that, but I think that's it right there. Brown, skill-wise, out of all the regulars on this team, probably the worst passer. The worst ball mover out of all of them.
Even
the centers.
Yeah.
So, like, he's got to catch up to be able to join this dynamic here.
Yeah, and once that happens, they become ridiculously scary at that point. But we got to get there.
Well, that's the thing is, one is a matter of health. And, you know, Ime did say prior to the game, and this pisses me off a little bit. I don't want to, you know, go down the negative path. It's just this hasn't made sense from the get-go. He'll stay out until he's 100%. That's what we assumed happened last time, that he was out until he was 100%. He missed a significant amount of games. Nobody expected that he would have returned without being fully healthy. So this is the first admission that this time he's not coming back till he's 100, which means he didn't come back at 100. He came back at less than 100 and tried to work his way through it, which was really stupid and cost them a few more games. We'll see how many. But number two, the elephant in the room is – The one thing that hasn't worked right now is the Tatum Brown connection on the floor. And that first unit, you know, working there where everyone's clicking at the same time. You've had a couple Jaylen games and a couple of Tatum games and not really much else. And so integrating Tatum, integrating, you know, Jaylen back into this and then figuring out what your rotations are going to be off of it when everybody's healthy is something they haven't done yet because they, how many healthy minutes, Bobby, or what is it? What's the number?
Six games healthy.
Yeah.
Even at this stage, that's a paltry number. When you're talking about your two pillars, if you will, it's weird because, you know, Tatum, it seems that the message that Marcus put out there, Tatum is taking it to heart. He looks so much more comfortable trying to get other guys the ball than he has at any point. You don't see nearly as many of those possessions where he brings the ball up, he looks to his left, he looks to his right, he looks at the guy in front of him trying to guard him, and he just goes to the cup. Now he's actually looking to dribble, drive, and pass to Marcus or you know, try to set up.
He has passing skill. He has willingness to pass. This whole selfish line, I know he addressed it last week. I just don't see it with him. Watching him game in and game out, he wants to get off the ball. He really does. And it doesn't always happen. The trust factor, I think, goes into it. His belief in his own scoring ability, I think, is very high. And I think he thinks it solves a lot of problems out there. But I do think there's a belief in his pass there. Like, he trusts his own passing ability, and I think his own passing ability is high. I don't know about Brown.
And that's the last hurdle with Jaylen. Because the one thing about Jaylen we can say is that every year he's been in the league, he's gotten significantly better in one specific aspect of his game. But
the handle, the shot, yeah.
Yeah, but the ability to be a playmaker still is an issue. The ability to get others involved. Because to me, that's at the heart of you making the guys around you better. That's the one thing that Tatum does not do at an elite level. He's getting better at that, but he by no means is an elite player at making those around him better, and he's trending in that direction. I'd say the last week or two, Jaylen, not so much. And obviously, injuries have a lot to do with that. But even when he has been healthy, it just hasn't been there. And John, to your point earlier, hamstring injuries, and we talked about this when he first went out. It's one of, if not the most unpredictable injury as far as when you're fully ready to come back, because even if you're feeling good. And again, I went through this a number of times with Jerry Stackhouse years ago, who had multiple hamstring injuries. There's just no true, undeniable, you're ready to get back out there and you're not going to have any issues moment. There's really more of a kind of roll of the dice type feeling when you're coming back from a hamstring injury. So I don't freak out when guys come back and they come back too soon, because there really isn't a clear timetable. The only issue I had with the Celtics was that they gave the impression that he was going to be coming back in a very short period of time, like 7 to 10 days, I think, was the initial diagnosis.
And Ime said that this isn't a long-term injury.
Yeah, and it was three weeks.
And my first thinking was that that doesn't sound right, because either this was a very, 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 very minor tweak, or they're completely missing the boat on what hamstring injuries are like, because, if someone says they've got a hamstring injury, I'm automatically thinking that's 2 weeks. I'm not going to have them. Two weeks if it's just very, very minimal. If it's more than that, then it's going to take longer.
Well, what's up with Brown? I mean, we can knock the Celtics medical staff and Ime and the whole thing there, but what's clear is that he, early in the injury, and even today, Ime said it again, he's pushing like crazy.
Every player
to come
wants
back.
To play. It's the team's job to save the player from themselves. You know, mm-hmm. Every guy wants to get back out there. You know, you're supposed to put them through a battery of tests. You know, prior to a game or in practice, through a workout, see how they're moving, see if they have discomfort, and you're testing it. And if there's anything that tells the medical staff they're not 100%, they're supposed to say, I don't think he's 100%, and the decision's made. It's not the player. How do you feel? You know, you ask a player how they feel when they have injuries that are just pain tolerance, you know, not injuries that can be exacerbated if you go out there and play. Never with that. It's all, you know, can you play through the pain today? And that's what you ask them about. With this, you're just supposed to, he's not ready. So I don't get it. You don't listen to the player here. You actually, it's the opposite. You're supposed and he's, to not.
He's yeah. gonna miss some time here, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I'm okay with that because the time that he's missing is time that you get opportunities to look at a lot of these other guys who you need to evaluate. You need to know who can you reach at the end of the bench and actually bring to the game and give.
And
you
unfortunately,
something.
Romeo's not here either at the same Don't, time. That's nah, the guy you'd be looking.
That's my
at.
Guy. I wasn't going to bring him up at all tonight, Bobby. Thank
Romeo
you.
Would have played a ton tonight if he was healthy.
Why you got
what a bummer?
Did I just say I was, Bobby? This is why you can't have nice things, Bobby. You don't listen. You don't listen. We're not talking about Romeo.
Come on, Bobby.
He's on the injury report, isn't he? I mean,
yes. So is Al. So,
yeah, and we haven't talked about Al. So, touche.
No. Here's the the thing is this. I mean, it's all about opportunity. I mean, yeah. guys are – they have to be better at making most of those opportunities. And Romeo, this is par for the course with him. I mean, he's had multiple opportunities where you could see him having a chance to play a more prominent role than he has had. And injuries, illnesses, you name it, he's had it, have kept him from taking advantage of those moments. But this was a game, again, I thought the guys who – kind of took Romeo's minutes, guys like Pritchard, guys like Neesmith. I thought they did a good job for the most part. The only guy I had an issue with was Hernan Gomez. Because I just thought he just gave them very little when he was out there. He made a couple shots, but for the most part, I wasn't feeling his impact in a positive way at all in this game. But again, he's a guy at the end of your bench. I just would have liked to see him. What could Jabari Parker have done in that situation? Because if I need a guy to come out there and just take shots, I want Jabari.
I mean, he did only take one shot and he made it. So
what he does.
Yeah.
He literally,
fair enough.
He literally did.
It was a long three too.
That's what he does.
He had three offensive rebounds. Herman gets a lot of flack. Herman got a lot of flack.
I know. It wasn't all about him. It was just when you put him in there, it was a lineup full
it's
of guys at the bottom
it becomes
of the bench.
The Hernan Gomez lineup. And it's like that. Then it becomes about him. But yeah.
And, we're jumping off the shots that Pritchard made late that were pretty meaningless. He didn't play great. He didn't have a good game.
No, he didn't.
You hope it can carry
forward. Just needed some confidence because he had to remember, like, I'm the guy who scored 91 points at the YMCA. You know, like, I'm a guy who hits Damon Lillard depth threes when I'm cooking.
So what changed with him? That boggles my mind. You know, maybe he came into the league and guys didn't really know what he was about on the other side and – you know, the film caught up with him or whatever we always say about rookies. He was such an impactful player early last year. Bobby, and now, like, he's just a guy who comes in and shoots at the end of games.
Well, the thing about NBA players is that whatever skill set you come into the league with, you got to amplify that or extend that quickly because they're going to take away your first option. You have to have counters to all of what you do. I was reading a story about Bernard King in New York who said that he had 9 spots to his left, 9 spots to his right, and like 5, you know, top of the key where he knew if he got to those spots, he could knock those shots down. So that if he took away 1 or 2 shots, he had a counter to that. Peyton hasn't figured out what his counter is in terms of helping the team win. If he's not making shots, he's not giving you anything. And if
he doesn't have the pick and roll still.
Right. And if that's the one thing that you do well, and you don't have anything else to fall back on, you're going to be limited. You're going to get limited opportunities. And frankly, you're not going to be around very long. I'm hoping that he figures out ways to be a better playmaker. His defense, I'm not going to worry about that because it is what it is. I don't think it's going to get significantly better. I don't think it's going to get significantly worse. It is what it is. But he needs to figure out ways to be a more impactful playmaker when he's not making shots. That, to me, has to be the counter to his game at this point.
Yeah, he got a golden opportunity, too, around a Rob screen. And Rob was helping guys out here today in this one when he actually was able to get out there.
Rob had a much better game than the box score will indicate tonight, I thought.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
He does a lot of little things that really help
him
when they're out there.
He did so many little things. There was one stretch where they couldn't score, and all that was like a few Rob Williams, like, tips or offensive rebounds or things that were just keeping the ball active. Again, the line doesn't show it. He was a pretty active guy tonight.
Yeah. I mean, he had three blocks, but there were a lot of shots that weren't taken.
That block that, on right. Smith was nice. I know John liked that one.
I love that because I love the footwork. He had to shuffle his feet to reset to get the proper position. And he had him – he was like a D-back. He had him tracked step for step on that. And when he went to shoot it, Rob was like, nope, I'm here. You know, you didn't – I think you thought
just
you were getting –
to see all the fouls, the first time all year he really went on a foul front.
I mentioned the Embiid game. That's what it reminded me of. It was just like that where there's no big behind you and it's really important that you stay on the floor, and he got two quick ones and then two quick ones again in the third. It was like, come on, man. You know, like they didn't need him, but that was a little frustrating. You would have liked to see a little bit more there. Outside of that, you know, we did the Schroeder thing. We did the Tatum thing. I like the stretch that's going on here and a couple of things out of the bench, guys. Anything else put a bow on it before we take a quick look ahead to L.A.?
Well, this was, I thought, just another one of the Celtics' really good road games. They've been a good road team all season long for the most part. And when you start looking at breaking down the numbers, I mean, they've literally been the best defensive team on the road. And if you're able to play elite defense away from home, you take the crowd out of it. You frankly take your opponent out of it to some extent, and you give yourself a chance to win. They just need to get healthy and just be able to have a rotation that they can count on. And I think now you've got a couple guys at the back end that I wouldn't say Ime's trust has significantly increased, but at least now you know Pritchard, he still can make a shot or two every now and then. Hernan Gomez is Hernan Gomez. Grant Williams is giving you way more production than I think anyone thought he would. And, you know, it was a good win because, again, they smoked them out the gate, let them back in the game, and then they just said, okay, back to doing what we do well. Let's beat the snot out of these guys and get the hell out of town. And they did that.
Yep, and I thought it was funny that Horford missed the game with back pain because he was carrying them in Utah. He was sore after that one.
He's been carrying him most of the season, really.
Lifting them through this game. Does the NBA have a comeback player of the year award? I was trying to think of that.
I don't think they do. I think they did away with that.
If they did, hard to pick a guy other than him. I don't think there's a big injury guy.
I think
comeback
they still have it.
Year.
I think Randall won it last year.
Is it most improved?
Yeah.
Most improved. That's not really what I mean. I mean like a guy who was hurt the year before bounces back. Like the NFL has a big one, right? And I think baseball has one, but Horford would be the guy. I mean, he's the bounce back from just being dead in Philly, not doing much last year in Oklahoma City, to being one of the best all around players in the league. And you know, we talk about this offensive awakening here. I guess this is my last question off these last two games for you two: is it real, or did he just, you know, catch lightning in a bottle in Utah and face an awful defense here in Portland?
It's not real. Even an awful defense, you're not going to shoot 57%. So, yes, you're not going to look at 145 and say it's real. But this, in a normal world, shooting normal percentages is still a 120-something point game, which is trending in the right direction for what you want to see. But really, it's about how they're getting their buckets, less whether they're actually falling. And it all comes down to, you know, as we said, ball movement, making quick decisions, playing with a little bit more pace. When you see them doing that, you feel a lot better about the direction that they're going to go. And again, when you see Jason Tatum playing the style that he's playing now versus what he was during his kind of rut, even when, like I said, last night was a poor shooting night from three, overall his offensive game plan was solid. You know, and then tonight was a really clean game too. So you got to like what you're seeing in that regard. So it's about how, and you know, I like it. You know, I like what I've seen from them the last few, you know, even dating back a couple of weeks now.
Yeah,
you believe in Sherrod? They going back to 32% from three again. I don't think they're a good 3-point shooting team. And
I don't think they're going to be great, but that's the whole point. Is it offense takes work. You have to work at your offense. If
and that's
you
what they're
late,
doing right now.
You got to work at it. That's the thing. You always think about work for defense. You got to work for buckets too. You can't settle. You can't stand around. You can't just take the first shot that's available early in the clock. You can't give it to somebody and just get out of their way. That's lazy offense. They're working for their buckets now more, and that's more encouraging. But it takes sustained effort when you're not a lights out shooting team. And even when you are, like Utah, you got to work. You got to work and work the ball around and work the ball around and get those shots until it just becomes what you do. You can't. What I hate with them is, and we saw it last year too, you'd have a stretch. I remember there was one stretch where they had like a 28, a 30, and a 32 assist game all, you know, kind of bunched together. And then they just went right back to what they did before. You hate to see them regressing into bad habits. So it's, again, it's sustained effort and work at the things that you don't, you know, the you know, that you're not great
at. Cause it's hard. It's effort filled.
It's hard. You have to work. A lot of things. Yeah.
And
that's what you see. Yeah. Right. That's why you see some of those back to backs, you know, when teams, when you know they're cooked, when the first few shots don't fall and they're like, it's not going to be our night. Cause they're like, I'm not ready to work for it tonight.
Well, that was the good thing about this one is they were in Utah pretty late last night.
Yeah.
Got in here and just came out storming. 14.
Well, they would have been there sooner if Tatum didn't make everybody wait 3 hours for the Zoom post game. The bus couldn't leave. Bobby couldn't write his story.
Yeah.
That was rough.
Yeah, but there's a certain young man by the name of Kevin Garnett who
set the
was
bar.
On the same program.
Except you guys were in there.
It's funny how the better
waiting.
The longer the wait comes for them to come and talk to us after the game, regardless of how they play.
I was producing the show after Celtics post game, and we're still waiting on KG or just overseeing it. I'm like, oh my God, how long are we waiting for this? You know,
I'm not a patient guy when it comes to lines, like waiting for food, for an interview, like that sort of thing. Like,
and the post game scrum is not for you, Bobby. You're not scrum life.
Yeah. I would be standing there like, I'm never going to get this time back.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
You know, at least on the Zoom, you can go do post game. But
yeah, go make a turkey burger.
Turkey burger, yeah.
Yeah. Very quickly looking ahead. Obviously, last time the Celtics faced the Lakers, they beat the snot out of them. What are we expecting here? And again, just reminding people, we have a full cast of characters out there. Sherrod's heading to LA. We've got Josue Pavone. We've got Nick out there. The return of Nick. You know. Yeah, I know. Sherrod, don't be.
I think the Lakers stink. Man, like, and it's not even LeBron. Russell Westbrook's playing better. Davis, statistically, I know Kirk Goldberry put this out there, per shot, fewest points per shot in the NBA right now. Anthony Davis, worst shooter in the league right now.
Well, because, again, for some reason, the worst thing that happened to Anthony Davis was he shot well for a few games in the bubble. And during that title run, and all of a sudden he felt that he was a three-point shooter and he came back, and that's what he thinks he does now. He's a terrible – he's a very low percentage volume shooter from distance.
And it makes him easier to guard.
And he's relying on it. Again, you talk about offense taking work. Those bigs, when they get older, they don't like to get down low and work for it and bang as much. They want to try to develop that game so they can get some easier buckets and, you know, not constantly be friggin' knocking into people. And fighting for it and going to the lane and getting fouled. So they want that jumper. And Davis has gotten – his offensive game has gotten lazy.
And, yeah, he's not alone in that, because when you look at really these next two games, you're talking about two teams that rank in the bottom 10 in offensive rating. So you're talking about two teams that don't really do well offensively. And they're facing a Celtics team that plays really good defense on the road. So the Celtics – obviously will not be favored in either game, but they damn sure have a better than average chance of winning, because what they do well on the road, their opponents don't do well at home. So I think they'll get at least one of the two. They might get both. I wouldn't be shocked if they won both, but they will be one of the LA teams.
There you go.
Worst. A lot of our favorites on this worst five shooters list to start this year. Davis, Sadiq Bey. We haven't mentioned Sadiq Bey once all year.
Josue's guy, yeah.
Cade, sadly, and De'Aaron Fox. Rough start for Fox this year. But, you know, I'm not even concerned about the stars with the Lakers, because they'll figure it out. I think LeBron, Davis, Westbrook, those guys are going to hit some sort of stride together by the end of the year. The roster around them is just bare bones in terms of talent. Kendrick Nunn, that signing didn't work at all. I haven't even seen him play once. I haven't even seen him in the uniform this year. You think of guys like Avery Bradley starting for them, DeAndre Jordan starting for them different games. And then guys off the bench, Malik Monk's fine. I think he's been good for them this year. You know, some of the other guys that they put in these games, Tucker can't shoot. And these, they don't accentuate LeBron. They don't accentuate Westbrook. These guys aren't players who help these other guys get better. And right. The tricky thing for them is that they have no outs on this roster. They're not going to be able to.
They're not players big. LeBron can make better either. Westbrook's not a player LeBron can necessarily make better because it's, again, it's a give me the ball and get out of my way sort of player. You know, I mean, Westbrook,
he's always been that way and he's never going to change no matter how much he is.
What a mess.
Talked to about that. It's not who he is. Never will, has been, never will be.
Right.
So I think the Celtics win this one handily. I mean, they have all the personnel in the matchup.
Again, I don't want to fall into the recency bias of having them watching them play well. The Celtics don't win anything easily.
Nothing.
Just showing up. They're not that good.
No, I don't mean they're going to win by 20.
They scored 145 points, but at one point, they were only up by like one or two points after having made 14 of the first 15 shots.
But let's not forget, the Lakers, they're not connected defensively. They don't have great personnel on the defensive end. I mean, that last game in Boston, they were able to pull Davis out of the post there and get downhill and draw free throws and all that different kind of stuff there. Westbrook is a disaster on that end of the floor. And LeBron, you know, he's playing free safety there, and Grant's going to be open. We saw that last week. So if they pass, if they move the ball and bend that defense a little bit, and we know Tatum's going to show up, it's like, there hasn't been a single Lakers game in his career that he hasn't looked good in. I feel really good about this one, especially in L.A. Oh.
Because, believe me, trust me when I say this.
Schroeder revenge game, yeah.
There's a different mindset that he's got for that game. And he will say all the right things, like it's just another game, but bullshit. It's different. It's different because of how it ended. And he is, to me, he's like that ex who is with someone who's significantly more attractive than you right now, and he's going to show her off. He's going to show off and show out. Expect a huge game from him. Would not be surprised if he sets a new career high scoring against Lakers.
That could be a bad thing, though. I don't want it to go all the way toward Schroeder's big scoring night. And he hasn't had one of those nights yet where he just takes over and everybody else gets left out of the equation.
He had a 38-point game that one time.
Game, yeah. But, you know, he hasn't been disconnected from everybody is what I mean.
No, he can still do that and be connected because, again, they're so bad defensively that he's going to get great looks. He's going to get great looks because if Avery Bradley is on the floor and you've got Tatum and Schroeder on the floor, guess who Avery is going to be trying to check? It won't be Dennis. So Dennis will see a lot of Malik Monk. That's a good thing. Westbrook. That's a good thing. I think he'll have a good game. I really do.
I can't see the Celtics losing this one. I really can't.
I can absolutely see it happening. I don't think it will, but I can see it happening.
I mean, it's not even about what the Celtics are doing. The Lakers just lost to the Clippers, and the Clippers have been pretty bad this month.
The Clippers were desperate for a win. Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, we're looking back. They lost to the Clippers. They lost to the Kings within the last week or two here, the Knicks. They are just dropping some bad, bad games. And, you know, 130-108, the Celtics beat them pretty handily in Boston last time.
Yeah, but that was LeBron's first game back after a long layoff. He played he did not have the kind of impact that we've seen LeBron.
Davis was setting the tone for them in that game, and that's never a good thing.
Yeah, so they'll be better.
Well, yeah, you had some problems there in that one.
Yeah, I worry about LeBron coming out. If you're the Celtics, I worry about him really trying to set the tone right from the gate. Would not be shocked if he takes like the first 5, 6, 7, 8 shots for them just to really kind of establish the Lakers. They're not playing around. They're trying to get this win.
We'll have full coverage. We got a couple days off. Patriots Monday night. Make sure you follow us for that. Monday night game versus the Bills. That's a huge one. Evan Lazar will be live and I will be live after the game. He's out in Buffalo covering that one. Like I said, CLNS is on the road, baby. Okay. Lazar in Buffalo, Sherrod's in Portland, the whole friggin' cast of characters.
I think we got to see LA.
Yeah.
I think we got to see Nick on the street with some Lakers fans and Evan with some Bills fans. That'll be good content this week.
Oh God.
Evan's table jumping. Yeah, he's doing it. He's doing it. No, he's a serious guy. He's a serious guy. He doesn't do that stuff. So we're going to wrap it up. Really good crowd tonight. I'm very happy you guys hung out with us late, 1:30 Eastern. And I know we've got you guys out. We got our guys out in Australia and the Philippines and all these different places. So for you guys, maybe not as rough as it is for me and Bobby back east. Sherrod still has time to go grab a bite and enjoy himself and, you know, this do some stuff.
This was quite the 2-day marathon. It was. So
yeah, that's what we do. Tomorrow. Bobby and I don't sleep. We don't sleep. So we'll be with you the rest of the trip. But again, thank you guys for hanging out. Once again, the Celtics win big. What was the final again? 145?
145-117.
I do want to push everybody the articles. BSJ, mid-range shot. CLNS, Josh Richardson. It was a tight day between the back-to-back. So if anybody missed those two articles, good stuff. Sherrod, anything you got out there?
Oh, just the usual stuff. I've got some stuff down the road that I actually I'm working on. So
I just blipped myself off. That just
yet, but, you know, lots of good content out there from the CLNS team. So
CLNS.com. There goes John. John.
Oh, I did it again. I hate when I do that. Sorry, guys.
I actually like that view. Underused here.
I don't mind it in some cases. Sherrod uses it for his podcast sometimes. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. Sorry about that. I went to hit the end button, and I knocked myself out, and I left you guys alone.